DeRozan finds JV. JV is fouled.
Looked like he hit his hand up
on the rim.
On the rim, yeah. He is in a lot of pain right now.
Well, we're going to start Bismack to start out with to give him the first opportunity to play. There's going to be different people in that position. Luis will be there. Lucas will be there some. So it's going to be man by committee.
We got next. This is Free Association with Dave Zarum and J.D. Bunkus.
All right, welcome to Free Association. This is Sportsnet's weekly Raptors and NBA podcast. I'm Dave Zarum, Sportsnet's NBA editor. Alongside me, as always, J.D. Bunkus, producer on SN 590 The Fan.
It's cold up in the six today.
Yeah, the six is a little chilly.
Oh, you know what? This is dawn on me. When did we just collectively decide that we were moving away from calling it the dot?
I'm glad you brought that up because that was the first time I ever called it the six.
Because back when I was like in high school and college.
Are you from Toronto?
No, I'm absolutely not.
I'm from Toronto. I just call it Toronto.
Okay. Well, except for you guys call it Toronto.
Toronto.
Yeah, Toronto. Yeah. Like you're Toronto. Yeah, it's all right. But I'm just saying that.
But that's how you vet someone who's not from the city is they say Toronto.
But that's the thing, like. People be like, remember like the freestyle battles, like King of the Dot? Do they still call it King of the Dot or is it now King of the Six?
I wish I could.
Okay, but seriously though, I kind of like the Dot more. Let me make my case for the Dot. Everybody goes by area codes. Everybody. Why not be unique? Why not be the Dot? Let's go back to being the Dot. That's the show.
That was quite a riveting take there.
You're welcome.
I don't know if the people can handle that one, JD.
I'm putting it out there.
Okay, well, let's talk about some basketball while we're at it. We got a really cool show coming up for you today. I can't bury the lead. Meta World Peace for 20 minutes, going in-depth on everything you'd want to hear Meta World Peace talk about.
Yes, the Panda's Friend is on the show.
A.K.A. Panda's Friend, A.K.A. Ron Artest. Really excited about that one. That's going to be coming up in the second half of the show. Off the top, we're going to be talking about the Raptors road trip. We're going to talk about what's ahead for this team, because it's a bit of a new landscape for the Raptors with their big man out.
Yeah, I think that's the big question this week, and we'll get to that.
So let's get to that right now. You're listening to Free Association on iTunes, Sportsnet.ca.
Hey, it's Kalo, and you're listening to Free Association.
All right, this is Free Association. So, you mentioned it, JD. The big question this week. Every week we start our show, this first block, with our big question of the week. And it's pretty obvious. Jonas Valanciunas, your starting center, a guy you're leaning on for a lot of production on both ends of the floor, is out for this foreseeable future with a broken left hand, fractured bone. That's the kind of injury that lingers. It's the kind of injury that doesn't heal quickly, although he's opting for rehab versus surgery, which expedites the timeline a little bit. But I mean, can the Raptors survive the injury to JV?
Survive, yes. Thrive, no.
I don't know why I found that funny.
It's kind of a heartbreaking injury. Like, let's not sugarcoat it. I think that the big man was kind of coming into his own. He was showing that he was kind of one of the top centers in the league.
Yeah.
Really progressing on both ends of the floor. We talked last week just about how impressed we were by not only what he was doing on offense, but what he was doing on defense. So to see him kind of sidelined for an extended period of time, I think the thing that hurts the most is that one of your franchise building blocks is going to have to take a step to the side in his development. So that's the first thing that stings.
Well, I'm not so sure about that. I'm not sure if this really hurts his development. I mean, I think it's just when he comes back, I fully expect him to come back to where he left off and then continue getting better from there.
I just mean that anytime you're missing significant time, you're not improving. Like, he's not able to get in, get game reps.
No, but if it's like a 6 week kind of scenario, yeah. I think he'll be okay.
I don't think this is going to deviate or derail his career, but it is a little disheartening, especially after he got off to such a good start.
The bigger impact for me is on the team itself.
Right.
So you look at who's going to replace JV in the lineup. We saw on Sunday versus the Clippers, their first JV-less game, Biombo playing a lot of minutes. We saw Luis Scola step up in terms of providing that kind of post offense in the paint that JV is usually good for. Who's the guy who for you needs to step up the most? Because I got to say, Scola really opened my eyes with his play. I don't know if it's sustainable, but he has played really well during that whole West Coast trip. You know, the Raptors went 2-for-5, I believe, and he went 2-and-3, rather. But he played really strongly for most of those games, especially over the weekend. I think he's a guy who can come in and replace JV's production offensively, just purely from a points per game perspective.
Okay, so let's kind of look at the impact of what's going to happen here, because the guy that I think needs to step up is Patrick Patterson, because like you mentioned, Louis Scola.
You could have said that before JV went down.
Sure, too. I just think that now it's kind of imperative that he progresses a little bit more quickly here. He's been really slow to start this season. I think that everyone was kind of expecting a little bit more of a scoring punch. He's a guy that shot nearly 38% from deep last season. I just think that you look at this lineup right now, and replacing JV with Bismack Biyombo is devastating. Like, there's no, you talk about the impact on the roster. There's nobody that even comes close to replicating what JV brings you. He's sixth in the league in rebounding. He offers you about close to 13 points a game.
He's one of the more efficient scorers.
Exactly. And a low post option. I think that.
And also, you know, you mentioned Biyombo, and the perception is that Biyombo gives you an upgrade in defense. And we've talked about it before, how, at least statistically by some analytics, JV has a better defensive rating
right now. He does.
So you really do lose, you're worse off on both ends of the court.
That being said, I will say that I think that sometimes numbers do lie, and it is a case of Biyombo is definitely the better pick and roll defender both ways on
the
floor.
So it's like, it's situational.
But JV's the better rebounder, so teams are going to get less more second chance opportunities when he's not on the floor. Biyombo starting and getting extra minutes kind of worries me a little bit. They always talk about this, where you play a guy that's a bench player in extended minutes and you put him into a starter's role and he gets exposed. And defenses are flat out leaving Biyombo wide open in screen and roll situations. And we've talked before, both Kyle Lowry and DeMar DeRozan like to probe the defense, like to play in the pick and roll. And while Biyombo sets good screens, when he's wide open out of the basket and they're doubling on the ball handler, be it DeRozan, Joseph, or Lowry, it's tempting to throw the ball down to that guy when he's wide freaking open under the basket. The problem is,
when most of his contemporaries can do something in that situation.
Yes, but he can't catch and he can't finish. And you see times where Biyombo plays outside of himself, like even in that Clippers game, which, by the way, I wanted to scratch my eyes out that second half. That was maybe the worst half of basketball.
That whole game was a very Raptorsian experience.
Oh my God, that third quarter was painful.
How early into that third quarter did you feel like the Raptors are going to blow this game?
Oh, it
took me like less than
5 minutes in. Yeah, 5 minutes in, I was like, oh God, this is happening. But Biyombo just isn't a credible enough threat on offense. And so what ends up happening is you see the Raptors taking those difficult shots, those long twos that we haven't liked in the past, those contested threes. And this is my biggest thing with the JV injury, outside of, you know, it being disappointing for him, is that the Raptors are a team that's still kind of searching for an identity. They wanted to move away from being just a purely jump shooting team with DeMar and Kyle, and JV was the one option offensively that you could rely upon going down on the block and getting some offensive production. A guy that can shoot free throws effectively, that had that right-handed hook, which we said last week has been unbelievably efficient this season. And now the Raptors are starting to kind of revert to those old bad habits that we saw before. The part where I'm a little scared of that. A little scared of too much DeRozan, too much Kyle, the usage rates going up, the ineffective shots, and then when things tighten up in crunch time, like we saw on this road trip, things tend to go sour.
Gotcha. The usage rate is already, like, it has to go up for those guys. They're not going to avoid that.
Oh, it is.
And also, when you talk about old habits coming in and whatnot, that's something that I saw, and I'm with you on that, but that's something that I saw before JV got hurt. We saw it all road trip.
But that's what I was getting at.
I mean, JV or no JV. I mean, I don't think his injury impacts that at all. That's something that was already a problem.
You look through the first group of games through the season, DeMar was averaging around 15, 16 shots a game. Getting to the line, getting to the basket, super efficient. JV getting his touches, scoring. When they played that Sacramento game, DeRozan shot 22 times. And I think that you want to limit him.
That's not going to happen with JV out.
That's what I mean. That's the problem.
His field goal attempts are not going to go down right now.
I think that Raptors fans have come to understand that you're going to live and die sometimes with DeRozan and those long twos. That mid-range game of his, that's just who he is. That's what he's going to be as a player. But I've always maintained that he's actually a really good passer. And when he gets into that distributor mode, the Raptors play their best. And losing a guy like JV, who's a respectable option for him, that really hurts him too. And that forces him into those extra field goals. And we talk about Louis Scola. Yes, that's a really good option. But he's 35 years old. So do you really want to... I think it does, because you're going to put a lot of miles on this guy's body. You're going to put a lot of...
But Louis Scola is a physical freak. You heard what they said on the broadcast.
Yes, the strength
thing.
This guy holds
the Raptors record for bench press. Was it reps or single, one-off?
That's
that blows my mind. There's no way that can be right.
We'll have to confirm it. It must be right. I'm guessing
confirm.
They would have corrected it in the broadcast. I think that I really like Scola. I don't like extended minutes with Biombo. I know they're going to start him and they're going to try to continue with that conventional center role. But ultimately, I think the crunch time lineup is going to be a combination of what we saw in that Clippers game, where it's Scola and then Damari Carroll at the four, DeRozan at the three, and then the 2-point guard lineup. And then again, I'd really like to see more of Patrick Patterson. I think that he really has to step up and provide some more scoring for this team.
No question. I mean, you got to fill that void somehow. I do think, though, it's going to come down to the perimeter guys as well, like DeRozan, Lowry. Oh, you need to see him coming up with it consistently, continuing to score consistently. Ross, Joseph, like these are the guys who are going to have to pick it up offensively for the most part.
You're going to have to
change the way you attack. And frankly, during the early part of that Clippers game, the first half at least, they looked pretty comfortable in a JV-less world. Like they looked like they had a better flow to their offense. You know, we've talked before about how they seem to kind of halt what they're doing and halt their rhythm a lot to get JV involved, and that's not going to be an issue with him out of the lineup. Again, this is kind of silver lining, a half glass full perspective on it, but it may allow you to do things that you couldn't do with JV in the lineup.
But what were the Raptors doing that was so effective in that first half against Clippers? They were going to the basket. They were getting threes. Damari Carroll was playing out of his freaking mind. Louis Scola was playing extremely well.
Yeah, there was just more movement.
Right. And that stagnated, but you also were playing a Clippers team that in that first half was a disaster.
Yeah, I don't want to stress too much on that because you're right. The Clippers are a disaster. That game was kind of funky.
But
when we look going ahead, they got a lot tougher competition in the next week even.
But haven't the Raps looked a little bit more like that team that we saw in the second half of last year? I know the defense has been better, but the ball seems to be sticking at times. DeMar DeRozan late in games is reverting back to difficult shot taking.
Yep.
And you've got the one guy coming off the bench that's providing you scoring lift. Albeit, I don't think that you would really compare the two players. I just mean in terms of looking at the two teams. And now you've got to avoid scoring pretty much everywhere else.
Can I give you the flip side of all this?
Sure.
I don't think the Raptors are in that bad a position. It's going to hurt without JV. They still have talent. They still have guys who can get it done and not replace his production, but kind of buoy you. I mean, you said it before. Can you survive? Yes. Can you thrive? Maybe not. But I think they will survive. But also, there seems to be a kind of weird bit of a doom and gloom coming off of this road trip that they just came back from, the West Coast trip. You know, we spoke, I think it was last week, about the trip, saying if they came back with two wins, we'd be happy. They came back with two wins, and JV injury aside, I don't think Raptors fans are very happy right now with how the team is. But I liked some of what I saw from that road trip. I liked the fact that they hung in with Golden State. I think that showed a lot, the fact that they came back and made a game of it with, 40 seconds left to go against the best early season team the NBA has ever seen. I like the fact that they... I like that start against the Clippers. I know we talked about how they were kind of, it's not the greatest example, but they looked comfortable without JV. And I like the fact that they were in a position to win a lot more games than they did. I don't like the fact that they lacked that killer instinct.
And they're blowing fourth quarter leads
against Utah, against Sacramento. Even more than JV being injured, that's what worries me the most.
But what do you think the cause of that is? Because like I said, for me, it's ball sticking and difficult shot taking late.
You said it before. It's old habits coming in. You saw, the ball stopping. Here's what I think it comes down to more than anything else. And this is one of my biggest pet peeves, period. I know every NBA team does it. But Kyle Lowry, man, he's the ringleader of all this. Playing against the referees versus playing against the opponent across the court from you. When you look at the end of the game, especially when you think of like DeRozan's drives trying to get initiate contact and get calls, I mean, I think these guys are playing their refs way too much. When the game gets close, they start looking how to get to the line, which is a good instinct, but then it almost like preoccupies them from doing what they were doing to get that lead in the first place.
They do seem to get a little rattled by referees. Like, that being said,
like
so
more than,
do...
More than rattled. I know a lot of teams do, but I mean, it just seems like incessant.
You're right. They are amongst incessant. The top groupings of teams, I would say, that I watch.
And it distracts them. I mean, when things were falling apart against the Clippers, that was a big reason why. All these fourth quarter blown leads, I think that had a lot to do with it, is them losing focus and putting their attention towards the refs and whether they got a good call or not. And it's just... It's not a good way to go about business. Just
when we talked thing. About that searching for identity thing, though,
that's their identity.
Getting to the line.
I understand
that's such a huge part of who they are and who they're going to be going forward, especially with getting DeMar going.
I just don't want to see the complaining so much with the
refs. Of course.
Like, you either get a call or you don't. Get up and move on.
Of course, but you can see the added frustration of when that's happening to them because, oh, wait, all of a sudden you're not getting a line. Oh, all of a sudden the offense is drying up and nothing's falling. And again, those tough shots and limited options on offense.
Yeah. Listen, I want to get to Meta, so we got to wrap this up real quick, but one, super quick, there was another positive I wanted to mention. You actually brought it up before the show.
I really like the way the Raptors are forcing turnovers. And when you talked about Kyle Lowry in terms of, oh, it starts with Kyle Lowry, this starts with Kyle Lowry too. He's the head of the snake when it comes to this. Kyle Lowry is leading the NBA in steals per game right now.
Yeah, we're taping this on a Monday afternoon, and Kyle Lowry is number one in the NBA in steals.
He's averaging almost three steals a game, and the Raptors in general are up almost two steals a game on the entire season so far. I just think that...
And that's going to continue without JV.
That's what I mean. On defense, if teams get lazy and they start trying to telegraph passes or make those skip passes, you've got a bunch of athletic guys, Lowry, DeRozan, Carroll, Joseph... Even Biombo said these guys are very active in the passing lanes. And it's very noticeable, and then you get to see the Raptors get out in transition, score easy baskets.
Yeah.
I'm loving that aspect of it. Kyle Lowry's so locked in right now. Hard to hate on much of what he's doing.
Cool. Okay. So when we come back here, I can't wait for this Meta World piece. It's time to get to the interview. We're gonna do it right after this little break. You're listening to Free Association on iTunes, Sportsnet.ca, maybe even SN 590 The Fan.
Sportsnet 590 The Fan, as my boy Dan Riccio calls it.
All right, we'll talk to you after this.
With a taste of what's inside the current issue of Sportsnet magazine, here's Donovan Bennett.
As Masai Ujiri embarks on turning the Toronto Raptors franchise into an elite NBA program, the building blocks are gradually being put in place game by game. I followed the team's president and GM one night at the Air Canada Center, and it was apparent that Ujiri leans on one pillar of strength, family, both nuclear and basketball.
It's better to go to war with a person that you know that person is going to have your back. How do you create that? You know, like you create that around children, you create that around wives, even as far as the people that work in the arena, you know, you want them to feel good about everything, because in this business, you're going to go through hard times. You're going to have adversity.
From longtime trusted confidants to his two-year-old toddler, Ujiri shifts from decision maker to daddy daycare throughout the night. The only time he doesn't seem stressed is when his MVP, his daughter, Zahara, is in his presence.
You don't know how it feels until you actually have a kid. When that something hurts her, when something, it kills you. She coughs, it makes me sick to my stomach.
The inner dialogue that every possession sparks is a fascinating struggle for the man with the power to put his roster together, but who is powerless as soon as the ball is tipped off. It was fun and enlightening to be a fly on the wall, to witness his daily process. Get a look at the perspective from the GM's chair in All Eyes on Masai.
Story and more can be found in the latest issue of Sportsnet magazine. Available on texture by next issue or by downloading the Sportsnet magazine app for Apple, Android, and Windows tablets and phones.
Hello, this is Jonas Valančiūnas, and you're listening to Free Association.
When I wake up in the morning, love. Sunlight hurts my eyes.
This is Free Association, rudely interrupting that beautiful song. Oh, kind of harsh that we play the JV ID in there. Like, this is Jonas Valančiūnas, and I am a breaking your heart. You did, Jave. Hey, we got something really cool coming up. We mentioned it off the top of the show. It's very exciting.
Meta World Peace himself.
Very cool.
Very cool because the guy, I mean, a lot of people say he's an open book. This guy's an open book. That guy's an open book. Meta World Peace is an open book. We taped this last week on the 11th anniversary of the Mouse at the Palace, which is probably his most infamous moment at this point. But
it's not the song Champions?
No. But to hear his kind of his take on everything, his transformation is incredible. And you talk about open book at the beginning, you wish him a happy birthday, and he goes right into like, here's my life story.
He
like,
did.
Just like right into
He's not shy.
Not shy at all.
Meta is not shy.
This is, I really enjoyed this one, JG. You want to just get right to it?
Yeah, I just want to say quickly, as a tease, make sure you listen because Meta World Peace has beef with a Toronto icon.
Yeah, that'll be coming up.
That's happening. That's happening in this interview.
One thing I want to mention is that Meta World Peace is auctioning off his Defensive Player of the Year trophy. He's doing this campaign, Family Defense, familydefense37.com or metaworldpeace.com. You can find out more. But let's hear about it from the man himself. Here's Meta World Peace on Free Association.
Love and happiness. Joining us down the line, the one, the only, Meta World Peace, who just celebrated his 36th birthday. So first of all, happy belated birthday, Meta.
Oh, yeah, I appreciate it. I'm excited. I feel great. I'm older and I feel great.
Yeah,
glad to hear.
I read somewhere that you saying you feel like you're in better shape now than you did the last time you were with the Lakers.
Well, yeah, because like what people don't realize, like when you get drafted, well, your life goes in stages, right? So you're a 15-year-old kid, you're at home. Your parents are strict, you're not going out as much. Then you get to college, you party a little bit. Then you get to the NBA, then you think you're somebody you're not. Then you're partying, you're drinking a little bit too much. Then you turn 25, and now you're like, you hit rock bottom and you hit the wall. You know, and then you get older and you're like, you know what, I shouldn't be partying as much. I might want to, you know, hold back on the clubbing, and then you start to feel better, you know. And now I'm at the point right now where I feel better.
Listen, it's the cycle. It's the cycle of the NBA life, right?
There's a cycle of NBA life. There's a cycle of, you know, sometimes you get beside yourself, you know, when you're younger.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, and then you get older, you know, and so at this point, I wish that I would have, you know, done things that I'm doing now where when I was younger, I would have probably, you know, added to my Hall of Fame career. You know, now I'm like fighting, you know, for my Hall of Fame career. And my only argument is being one of the best defenders of all time. But, you know, if I would have taken care of myself and done more and been more mentally stable, you know, I would have had an easier argument, you know, for my Hall of Fame career.
Well, listen, that's like the time-tested conundrum is, you know, you wish you knew now. You wish you knew then what you know now. I mean, that's a problem I think everyone has. I'm glad you mentioned the defensive thing because one of the main things we want to ask you about is I want to let everybody know that Meta is involved with the coolest charity event. It's the Family Defense Sweepstakes. Family Defense Sweepstakes. Yes. And you're going to be giving away your Defensive Player of the Year trophy? I mean, you worked hard for that thing.
Absolutely.
You're giving everything away, though. You already gave away the rings. Like, what are you going to have left at the end of your career?
I mean, you know what we're going to have left is we're going to have good energy in the world.
Okay.
And I think the more energy you give, you know, to the world, you know, you don't know where it goes, you don't know where it travels to, but hopefully it goes somewhere. And when you put out good energy like that, you know, it's going to reach some kid, it's going to reach a family. And this time we're focused on families. My last ring raffle, we was focused on mental health awareness, and we raised $700,000 in my championship ring. And our goal right now is to raise $2 million, you know, with the, with the Defensive Player of the Year trophy. And we're focused on you know, organizations, institutions, that's because on families. Because right now, if you look at the TV, you look at and you hear radio, it's only talking about, you know, how to disrupt the family.
Yeah.
You know, you got songs talking about, you know, I'll take your girl. Or you got kids, you know, loving, you know, this, you know, superficial lifestyle. But nobody's talking about, you know, having a great family or being a good partner. You know, myself included, you know, when I was growing up, you know, I was more into, you know, the fast lifestyle, you know, and that doesn't keep a family together, you know, and so right now that's my focus.
And that's, I mean, obviously it's a great cause. I want to come back to, I want to ask you more about how you got involved, but you know, it's interesting. I mean, JD mentioned, you know, the championship ring thing, you just brought it up, 700 grand from that, looking for $2 million to raise, as part of giving away the defensive trophy. But you do a lot of kind of fan involvement stuff. I mean, you've been the best man.
Children's book too.
Children's book. You've been the best man at like a stranger's wedding. You take people bowling. You show up to people's houses for dinner. I mean, you got a really cool dynamic with your fans. Is there any one kind of story that sticks out from that kind of stuff?
You should say it again. Sorry, what was the last part of the question?
Like if you're telling your grandkids about all the stuff, all the cool stuff you did with fans, all the interactions you did off the court. Right. What's the first one that you would bring up?
Maybe I love when I was playing flag football on the beach. That was fun.
Okay.
Because we would do that a lot, and then we would also. It was like a group of us. It was like a cult. Every week, I'll just tweet after a while, hey, we're playing sand football, and then what we call a sandball. And then after a while, people would just show up. And that was like one of the funnest things I had because I knew none of these people.
Yeah.
And a lot of us became close friends. You know, a lot of the guys, people that I'd never known before, we became, you know, pretty cool friends.
So you have the same people showing up over and over?
At the sandball event, it's the same people. We don't really invite any more people.
Yeah.
But the sandball event, there's the same people over and over. We just go there, we play football, we eat, you know, we kind of picnic on the beach. It's fun.
That's really cool, man. And like we look at Dave and I are scanning over with trying to talk about your career, and you talk about kind of the good energy you put out there, and it has been quite the career for you, and especially over the last couple of years. And I want to ask you a little bit about China and your experience over there, because that just kind of fascinates me. So I want to know kind of one thing that you kind of took away from being there, what that experience was like for you, and what inspired you to come up with the name The Panda's Friend. I got to know the story behind that.
Yeah.
Which is amazing.
Yeah, so when I was in China, it was great. You know, I went there because I was in Houston. I was averaging about, I think, 17 points that season and, you know, 20 plus points in the playoffs. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I was averaging, right before I got suspended with the brawl in Detroit, I was averaging 25. And the year before that, I was averaging 18. So, and I got defensive player of the year. So I was probably going to be in talks for MVP the year I got suspended because, you know, my average went up 7 points and I was still locking people up. And when I got to L.A., it was all about sacrifice. I was playing with Powell, Kobe, Bynum, Lamar, and Fisher in the triangle system. And when I got to L.A., people stopped talking about the sacrifice, and they was talking about how my average was dropping. And meanwhile, this is supposed to be a team sport, and people are supposed to love the fact that we're the San Antonio Spurs of the world. But I wasn't getting no credit for that. So when I was with L.A. for 4 years, I said, you know, I'm just going to go to China because I wanted to prove to myself that I could still play the game. Mm-hmm. And I didn't want to finish off my career just being a role player. So I went to China, I went to Italy, I did my thing, and now I'm back, you know. And so that was my whole reason of going to China. But when I was going there, you know me, I like to entertain. So, you know, pandas are the number one animal in China, it's very sacred in China. And I wanted to go there and kind of embrace the culture a little bit.
Right.
So I went there as the panda's friend.
Well, and it always seems like a cool experience for players to do that, you know, as they're getting older. It's an opportunity to take advantage of a friend of the show here, Mike James. He just spent time in China. We talked to him about it. Sounds like a really kind of unique experience. So it's cool that you're able to do that. Real quickly, I mean, you mentioned kind of before that Pistons brawl, you were averaging 25 points. I mean, and you were kind of at the height of your playing career, just in terms of on the court. How long did it take after that for people to kind of come around and start giving you credit for what you do on the court again? And what was that process like for you?
You know, it took me a while, man. You know, when I had the brawl, you know, I kind of went into depression. So I was in really good shape. Mm-hmm. You know, I was an all-star the year prior. And I was probably going to be an all-star more years after that in the East. And then, I was about 250, 245, 250. And then after the brawl, I got depressed. I wanted to retire. And then I got up to about 270, 275. And I remember the next year I got back to Indiana, I caused a little bit more problems in the locker room. I requested a trade, and then Larry Bird traded me. Mm-hmm. And then I was out for 3 months. And then when I got to Sacramento, I told Rick Allerman, I said, listen, I don't think I can give you anything. You know, I'm 273 pounds. And Rick Allerman says, you know, Ron, we're going to go as far as you take us.
Wow.
And when he said that, you know, it touched home. So I immediately went to the media and I said, we're going to the playoffs. And then everybody laughed. Said, yeah, well, you're in last place. No way you're going to the playoffs. You went to the playoffs and almost beat the Spurs that year. You know, and Rick Adaman, you know, kind of changed my life. And it took a while. I was still disruptive and dysfunctional, mentally unstable. But I was getting better and getting better and getting better. And Rick Adaman, you know, he was a major part you know, my transformation.
Meta, what's your, you mentioned Larry Bird there. I'm curious, what's your relationship with him now? Because he was kind of a guy that wanted, kept kind of taking a chance on you, and he was a guy that really believed in you. I'm curious to kind of where you're at with the legend now.
Well, you know, Larry Bird was, he was in my corner 150%. You know, I was very disloyal to Larry there, you know, just being an egotistical kid on top of, now, if you put the ego aside, dysfunctional and mentally unstable, that's a bad mix right there. And that's what Larry Bird had to deal with. So, you know, when I was with Larry, Larry took time out of his day to come down every day and work with me. So the year that my average went up, that had a lot to do with Larry and Chuck Person. So I was working with a Hall of Famer and a great, an NBA great, and Chuck Person every day. So these guys are taking their time out for me every single day. And then, you know, I wasn't ready for the NBA, and I was so caught up in myself. So right now, I think I tried to get back to Indiana a couple times, you know, for the last couple years, but for the Pacers, right? I tried to get back there a couple times, but you know, there was so much damage that was done there. You know, I didn't think Larry wanted to take another chance.
Yeah, but it's really interesting to hear about that dynamic. And it's cool to hear you two kind of go back and trace kind of your development once you got to the league. But I want to know about your development before you even got to the NBA. Obviously, you proudly represent Queensbridge and Queens, where you're from. And I do want to ask you about a friend of yours from Queens, Lamar Odom, in a little bit. But for you, I mean, coming from Queens, I'm sure that really kind of defined you in terms of your playing style and whatnot. I mean, I heard a story, I don't know if it's true, but you were playing at a tournament as a kid in Niagara Falls, and like you saw a teammate die on the court, and you just this kind of rough style. I mean, what can you tell me about that and how that kind of shapes you as a player?
What happened was I didn't see Lloyd Newton die. So Lloyd Newton was a neighborhood favorite, and Lloyd Newton was a guy who was probably going to go pro, and we looked up to him. But they had a game at Long Island City High School, for Long Island City High School in Niagara Falls, playing for a championship. And then, you know, in my neighborhood, it was a lot of, you know, we were rough. And, you know, we ignited a lot of different things, you know, confrontationally. So whatever happened at the game, you know, one of the other opponent's fans got mad. It was a big fight. And then they threw a table leg. They broke the table leg from the scoring table. They threw it. And then it went through Lloyd's heart. And then when they got back, we heard that Lloyd Newman passed away. And this was like, you know, if I'm in the neighborhood, and the kids looking up to me here that, you know, Metal World Peace, something happened to Metal World Peace, I'll run our test. Mm-hmm. It was the same situation. You know, Lloyd Newton was a Queensbridge great, you know, and so that was very unfortunate that happened to him.
I mean, I'd imagine that kind of stuff stays with you for a long time. And, you know, but I was thinking, like, part of the family defending it really obviously wants to hammer home the importance of the family unit and how much that support system helps guys at every stage of their life. And I couldn't help think of Lamar Odom, who you go way back with, way before the Laker days. I know people know that, since you guys were like teens. I have to ask, like, when did you hear about it? Did you think it's the kind of thing that could have been prevented? How do you react to something like that?
Well, Lamar, it's a situation like this. I know exactly where Lamar is from. You know, I can never judge him. I know exactly what he's been through. I know his family situation. I know his mom situation. I know his neighborhood situation, and when you get guys like that, like myself and Lamar, you don't know what could happen to us type of guys.
Yeah.
You know, you might get a guy like me who is dysfunctional. You might get a guy like Lamar who's in a brothel, you know, looking for some type of love. You understand? And that is not, you know, that's normal coming from where we come from, because it's a very stressful environment. So for me, I'm just like, I'm very supportive of Lamar and his recovery.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm not as quick to judge guys like myself, you know, guys like, you know, even when DeMarcus Cousins was going through his little trial, you know, his early stage in his career when he was going through some immature thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm not quick to judge. I'm quick to, you know, kind of try to figure out these solutions. And that's why I'm constantly giving back, you know, to these different types of, you know, different type of kids.
Yeah, and it's cool.
Growing up every day.
Exactly, and it's cool to see you kind of becoming that role model for that type of player. To see how you've come and you've really like chilled out. You're a consummate vet. We were just talking to Tracy Murray last week, and he was talking about kind of your dynamic now with the younger players and how much how important you are in their development. I'm sure it's a lot of new responsibility for you.
It's fun, you know. Like, for me, it's weird because I'm in practice, and I'll post a young guy up, take him to the basket, and maybe even take the ball.
Okay.
And then I'm teaching him how to play at the same time. You know, it's kind of fun that I'm in a situation where I can actually teach, and then I can actually show. Because when I first got there, people thought I was old. They thought I couldn't play no more. I took that kind of personal. So I actually had to go on the court and practice a couple of times, you know, dominate a little bit, show how easy it is,
right?
You know, and then they listen when they actually see me, you know, doing my thing.
We'd be remiss if we didn't ask you a little bit about him too. You've known Kobe Bryant for a long time, and I'm curious to know how he's changed as a teammate over the years, in terms of the kind of the first time you were with the Lakers, your first tour there, and to now, if at all.
Kobe, I see a different Kobe now. And I see a Kobe, he still can play. He almost had a triple-double the other night. You know, and I told Kobe, I said, listen, in December and January, they're going to be amazing. And he says, you know, he's very competitive. So he says, man, I'm ready now. You know, I'm ready now. I said, Kobe, in December and January, watch, you're going to be even better. I know you're ready now, but you'll be better, you know. He's just so competitive, and he's really taking on the leadership role, something that I've never seen from him before.
Well, yeah, we saw him drawing up the play in the huddle. That picture went around. I'm sure you might have caught it.
People can mistake that for him trying to do a little too much. He's just trying to help.
Of course,
you know, we're all trying to help each other. We got a bunch of young guys on the team, and I didn't want people to think like he's a disrespecting coach. You know, everybody's trying to help, and it's not. When coach is going to the huddle with his staff, you know, we're always trying to help the young guys because we're trying to learn on the go. You know, so Kobe, we're always trying to, you know, give some type of knowledge, you know, to the young guys.
But I think that's how it came across. I don't think it came across as kind of
Yeah, when you guys have a pretty legendary coaching staff full of guys, a lot of former players. He's got Mad Dog. Yeah, like you mentioned, Byron Scott. Like, that's not really a group that I guess people would think get disrespected.
Now, it's called the Family Defense Sweepstakes. I wanted to mention that again. Really worthwhile endeavor. Meta's going to be giving away his Defensive Player of the Year trophy next summer, but there's going to be sweepstakes every month with giveaways as part of this thing.
Man, perfect. You're the best. Thanks so much for the time today, and good luck with the charity, man. We'll be paying attention to it and your career the rest of the way.
No, I appreciate it. Thank you, guys.
Thanks again to Meta World Peace. That was really cool. There's a lot to touch on there. I mean, again, the open book stuff, it's just really refreshing to see. All the attention comes from the Malice in the Palace when it comes to Meta World Peace these days. You had a couple thoughts about that.
Well, one, I don't think all the attention comes from that. He's on a Lakers team. He's playing in the NBA currently, but yeah.
Maybe it's just now because the anniversary was last
week. It's the anniversary's
up.
There was just two things that I always think of when it comes to Malice in the Palace, and they actually, neither, like, well, they do involve at the time Ron Artest. One is that I always thought it was annoying to me as a basketball fan that it was a major, like, it was a major deal. I don't mean to make light of the Malice at the Palace, but that we look back on Mike Milbury going into the stands and beating that guy with a shoe and fighting as being like, oh, boys will be boys and hockey in the day and slap shot. And then you look at the Malice in the Palace, it's like monsters, irreprehensible actions. Suspend them forever. We'll never forget Ron Artest.
You mean people don't look at others equally?
That's kind of what I'm saying.
Wow,
yeah,
really?
There seems to be
another hot
some
take
reason why
you're
guys
on fire today.
Yeah, why it's okay for one group but not another. Just saying.
Yeah.
The other one is how Jermaine O'Neal almost killed that guy.
If he didn't slip.
Yeah. Jermaine O'Neal had it. There's a guy
a
that ran at Jermaine O'Neal on the floor. And we were talking about power rankings of guys you last want to get hit on that were on the floor that night, and he was number two behind Ben Wallace.
It would have been like the punch, like the Kermit Washington
Rudy T, where he just eviscerates him.
It's the force of the guy running towards the fist that creates the problem.
That guy must... I wonder if his family watches the highlights and is like, Oh, wow. Thank you. Thank you, God, whatever God we worship, for saving our husband slash brother slash son.
That guy seemed like a scumbag.
He kind of did. Yeah, he did.
I don't.
Who runs that Jermaine O'Neal on the court?
I want to mention that we put the story on Reddit last week, the Larry Bird quotes you heard and the Malice related quotes you heard to honor the anniversary on sportsnet.ca. We put that up, the interview up, and it made it onto Reddit, and there was a ton of comments, like more than 100 comments on it. I just want to read a couple of the ones that I think stood out to me. This guy's got a messy Reddit name, but what he said is, all the work Meta has done since the Malice proves to me he was super committed to changing. This guy recognized he had a lot of issues, which most can't even do. Then he got the help needed to change. This other guy's named It's Me Dude Man. These Reddit names. He said, lots of older people never deal with mental issues because they don't think they have a problem, or they're too proud to seek help. Props to Meta for being open about it. I'm sure he's inspired others to change as well. And lastly, Joaquin Bandersnatch.
I don't think we need to hear the names.
I love the name. Joaquin Bandersnatch. You don't need to hear that.
I don't think we're allowed to say that.
He said, that's a great point. He said, dude is absolutely a role model for anyone with any sort of mental disorder. I mean, he shouted out his psychiatrist in his Game 7 interview. I think that's unprecedented in sports. So Meta, rightfully so, getting a lot of recognition for his openness on the show. But we got a special surprise. JD, you talked about it. We teased it before. We had Meta on the phone, and we couldn't help but get into the FAQ. If you listen to the show, you know what that is. And as you'll hear, he has some negative words for a certain Toronto icon.
Doesn't like him. Not a fan.
So let's hear this. This is the FAQ with Meta World Peace.
Who's the best MC in the NBA, not including yourself?
Lou Williams.
Oh.
That was my vote, by the way, Meta. I'm just going on record there. Okay. Yeah, he's awesome. BLT or club sandwich?
BLT.
What's your favorite thing you can only get in Canada when you come up here and visit?
I love Canada. I love Canada.
So do we.
I mean, everything. I love Canada. One of my favorite places.
You know what? We'll take that. Okay, when's the last time you cried at a movie?
Oh, wow. I cry every movie. Like, anything. I even cry in tennis matches. when Serena plays, I just can't. When I watch anything emotional, like I can't hold back.
Do you blame Drake for Serena missing out on the Grand Slam?
Absolutely. Oh man, I'm so that relationship could have waited.
Oh man.
Hey, in a zombie apocalypse, who's the last guy in the NBA left standing?
Meta World.
Yeah,
good answer.
I think that's a solid answer. Okay, if you were a wrestler, what would your entrance music be?
Another
rest of
my history music would be
maybe
a Drake song.
Okay.
Interesting.
I'm going to lull my opponent to sleep. maybe Hotline Bling.
I like that.
Last one for me. Do you remember the best thing a fan ever yelled at you?
The best thing a fan ever yelled at me was, you saved me from being an arsonist.
Oh, wow. All right.
That happened actually. That was crazy.
Wow.
That is crazy.
Do you collect anything?
I don't collect anything. I'm not a big fan of having too much things because I move a lot. Mm-hmm. And I hate when I have to pack.
Who enjoys packing? He's got a great point.
That is a good point. You know, I loved how I thought that we got suckered in so hard when he was like, what's your wrestling music going to be? He's like, something about Drake. Yeah. We're both like, oh, that's nice of you to make up with Drake. And he's like, so I could lull them to sleep. I was like, oh.
Yeah, what you hear from JD and I is the sound of pure pew, pew. Confusion when he first says Drake after knocking.
Yeah.
That was cool. The whole interview was great. And to wrap it up on that lighter note, certainly.
Way to pat yourself on the back. You're like, the whole interview was great. We were great. He was great.
No, the interview was great because Meta was great.
I was there too. You were good. You were good.
No. Meta was good.
Meta was great.
Okay, fine. We got the best out of Meta. How about that? But I really, honestly, let's be real. I don't think it takes much. Listen, this has been a lot of fun. You can catch us every Tuesday, as always, on iTunes, on sportshead.ca. JD, the Raptors are coming up this week. Three games: Phoenix, Washington, and
the Cleveland Cavaliers.
Record. Number of wins they walk away with.
Two.
All right.
Minus one.
One. With you on that. Okay. This has been Free Association. This has been a lot of fun. You're listening to Free Association, and now you're not. Set it out. Give it up. Fill me from your loving cup. Set it out.
is about all of us. I love you, people.